United Nations Radio presents the UN Story.
Dr. Felton speaking.
Oh, Doctor, this is Mrs. Ridley.
Oh, how are you, Mrs. Ridley?
Fine, thank you. We're all well, except young Peter. I'd like you to see him.
Oh, what's the trouble?
I don't know. After school today, he wasn't his usual rowdy self at all. Just curled up in a chair, and when I suggested bed, he went at once, without protest. That's not normal.
After school, huh? All right, I'll drop by.
Thank you, Doctor, if you would. I don't like to take chances in this cold weather.
When winter comes, so quite often does influenza, one of the most familiar yet unpredictable and puzzling of human diseases. This UN story tells how scientists in many countries are cooperating in the World Health Organization's War on Flu.
There you are, young man. Now you'll be fine before you know it.
Well, now you've seen him, what do you think, Doctor?
Well, poor Peter's feeling very sorry for himself, but don't you worry, Mrs. Ridley. His temperature and pulse are a little high, but...
Is it flu?
Well, it could be, but influenza is a very difficult disease to diagnose. So many respiratory troubles have similar symptoms. However, I got him to gargle for me, and I'll have laboratory tests made on the washings, and then we'll know.
Whether he's got the flu germ, you mean?
Well, not the germ, exactly. The virus, and they're very different.
Oh? In what way?
Well, for one thing, a virus is much smaller than a germ, or a bacterium, to give it its right name, but... The important difference is that a bacterium will breed in many places while a virus needs the living cells of the human body, or of certain animals.
How on earth was all this discovered? Why, to me, viruses and bacteria have always seemed much the same. Things to be avoided.
Yes, that's true enough. You know, it's a very interesting story, really. As you know, Louis Pasteur was the man who started the science of bacteriology, the germ theory of disease.
I know.
And so in the case of flu, all early research was done in the light of his discoveries. And then in 1918, just when the World War was ending, there was the most terrible outbreak of influenza ever known.
I remember my father telling me about it.
Well, before it was over, more than 15 million persons had died.
Well, that's a fine thing to say with Peter in bed.
Don't you worry, no, he's in no danger. But that great pandemic in 1918, it really focused attention on influenza. Research workers everywhere, they were determined to find the cause of it. In laboratories all over the world.
Just look at these mortality figures. They're appalling.
Yes, I know. Any particular bacteria appearing consistently in the specimens from the bad areas?
None at all. Different types all the time. Look, I think we're wasting time looking for bacteria. There must be some other agent causing the trouble.
Yeah, it looks like it, but... Well, what other agent? And how do we find it? That's the big snag.
Well, the other agent wasn't found until after 15 years of patient work. It was in 1933 that the modern work on flu started. In England that year, there was a serious epidemic, and Andrews and Smith were working at their laboratory at the British National Institute for Medical Research. Like scientists in other countries, they were sure that influenza was caused by a virus. The trouble was, nobody at that stage had been able to prove that such a thing even existed. But one day, while they were talking over the problem...
What's the matter, Andrews? You look ill.
No, no, it's nothing, just a headache. Go on, Smith.
No, wait. When did you start to feel unwell?
No, just now.
Have you got a temperature?
A slight one, perhaps.
Here, let me take it. Here, put this in your mouth, properly.
Look, please, it's not serious.
Of course not, but don't you see? This could be important. If you're getting flu, we can take a specimen throat washing from the very first stage of the attack. It may give us a lead. Now, let me see that thermometer. Ho-ho, I say, this is excellent. It's almost 100. All right, sir. Now, you must gargle at once.
I see your point, but I wish I wasn't the guinea pig.
All right. There now. Take this. We may get onto something that'll reveal...
Well, as it happened, Dr. Andrews had got flu and was in bed for over a week. But Dr. Smith was able to carry on their work. He filtered the garglings and began to inoculate the experimental animals in the laboratory. So the experiment went on.
And nothing happened?
Well, not immediately, but A few days later, one of Andrews and Smith's fellow workers at Hampstead got a phone call from a colleague working in another laboratory at Beckenham.
Laidlaw here.
Hello, Laidlaw. O'Brien here. Beckenham.
Well, O'Brien, what's news with you?
Something that might interest you people, I think. A lot of our staff here are away sick. Probably this influenza.
Well, that's not news, O'Brien. It's the same here. Andrews has been away for a week.
Oh, sorry to hear that. But my point is that our ferrets in the animal house are sick, too. And their symptoms look very much like human influenza.
Oh, I see. Yes, that's interesting. I'll have a talk with Smith about it. Thanks for the clue. Goodbye. Smith, are you busy?
Yes. What do you want?
I've just been talking to O'Brien. The Beckenham ferrets look as if they've got flu. They may have caught it from the staff. How do ours look?
All perfectly well, unfortunately.
Well, I think it might be worth trying another inoculation. I mean, if O'Brien's animals can catch it.
Well, actually, I was going to try that again, with a different method of injection. I thought of dropping the garglings up the ferret's nose.
Simple enough route, but why?
I don't really know. All the other routes seem to be useless, so we might as well try it.
All right. Let's go. Let's get the ferrets.
Right. You got him?
Yes. Hurry up. The devils are biting.
Yes, I know. All right, hold him steady.
Right.
There. That's done it.
Dr. Andrews was back at work the next day. He heard what had been done, and then the three men went to inspect the caged ferret.
Not much going on in the cage. Let's open up and see.
All right, come on, fella. Out you come. Gee, he seems sleepy.
He's sleepy right enough. Look at the nostrils.
Yes.
They're encrusted.
And there's a discharge.
I say, look at those eyes.
He's sneezing. He's got it. I say, he's got it.
We've done it, isn't it?
What an extraordinary way to find it.
Yes, and a funny thing about it all was that Dr. O'Brien's ferrets at Beckenham, which had put them on the right track, didn't have flu at all. They found later they were suffering from dog distemper.
Well, what happened next?
Well, the importance of that discovery was, of course, that for the first time, human influenza had been transferred to an experimental animal. The existence of the virus was proved.
And that's the one that causes all the trouble.
Well, not all the trouble, no. The first virus was called influenza A, and that's still the most prevalent form.
You mean there are others as well?
Oh, yes. Oh. Flu's one of the most complex diseases in all medicine. For instance, it was found that a vaccine which would give immunity to influenza A would be completely useless in certain outbreaks of the disease, showing that the virus didn't always act the same way. And then, in 1940, Dr. Thomas Francis at the University of Michigan found a new type altogether. Virus B.
I see what you mean by complex.
Oh, yeah. There are all sorts of unanswered questions about flu, even today. We're not sure where the virus goes between epidemics. What makes it flare up suddenly in some place? Epidemics of influenza A seem to turn up about every 2 years, and B every 5 or 6. But sooner or later, I think we're going to get all the answers. Well,
that's encouraging, I guess. But tell me, just what is being done to control flu, to prevent, say, another outbreak like 1918?
Well, let me try to put it briefly. The only sure way to check the spread of flu is to immunize people, just the same as we do with diseases like smallpox or typhoid fever. But to do that, we must have vaccines, and they must be the right ones. And to get the right ones, we've got to know what particular strain of the virus is at work. And to discover that, we must make tests on specimens from cases, just as we will with Peter's garglings. And, above all, we've got to be quick.
You've set yourself a problem, Doctor.
Yes, but not an impossible one. Today, we have things so organized that we can really tackle an epidemic.
Oh?
You see, after the last war, the danger of influenza was fully recognized, and since the virus is no respecter of peoples or boundaries, it had to be tackled on a worldwide basis.
World Health Organization?
That's it. The WHO was the obvious body to do the work. In 1947, they started a World Influenza Center. It was established in London with Dr. Andrews in charge. And the Virus Strain Study Center was set up in New York during the war under Dr. Francis. It became the headquarters for the Americas. In addition, there are today 54 laboratories in over 40 countries cooperating in WHO's program.
And what do they do?
Well, to tell everything would take ages, but look, Let me tell you about the time I visited the World Center in London. The day I went there, Dr. Andrews gave me a very clear picture of what they're doing and what all the other centers are doing in different parts of the world.
Come in.
Dr. Andrews, my name is Felton.
Ah, yes, Dr. Felton. You wanted to see something of the work.
If you could spare the time.
Delighted to. Well, I suppose you know that we carry on virus research here, as we've always done.
Yeah.
But within the WHO program, we also act as a clearinghouse for information about influenza. For instance, we're often sent specimens for identification from places where they haven't yet got the facilities to carry out proper tests.
They send the specimens by air?
Yes, yes, oh. Packed in dry ice in containers, like this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's our job to identify the virus and pass on the information to all those who may be concerned. WHO does a lot of publishing. This, for instance, the Weekly Epidemiological Record. As you can see from the contents, it doesn't only deal with influenza.
Oh. Yellow fever, receptive areas notified by governments. Typhoid fever, designated vaccinating centers. Yeah. Tell me, who gets this?
It's airmailed from Geneva every Thursday to public health authorities and research centers in almost every country so that they can keep well abreast of the incidence of infectious diseases everywhere. Of course, in a real emergency, cables and airmail are too slow for adequate warning, so WHO uses radio as well. Every day, over the Swiss radio at Geneva, an epidemiological bulletin is broadcast in Morse code to all the regions of the world.
See?
The various public health authorities listen to it and so get the very latest information supplied to WHO by governments and research institutes. Mm-hmm. It's all part of the regular routine nowadays. Yes?
We've started testing that specimen. I don't think it's the same as the 51 strain.
I see. Well, look, I'll be along at once. Right. I'm sorry, Dr. Felton, but I'm really afraid I must go.
Oh, of course. I shouldn't have kept you so long. You've been most helpful.
It's a wonderful scheme, Doctor. I had no idea all that was going on every day, just to fight flu.
Oh, yes. It's only with machinery like that, working well, that we can hope to keep one jump ahead of our enemy, the virus.
Do you think we'll ever really beat flu, Doctor? Make it really a disease of the past?
Eventually, yes. But for now, we still have a lot of work ahead. Research will go on into the characteristics of the virus, of course, till we know all there is to be known about it. We've also got to increase the world capacity to produce vaccines in large quantities, and quickly. Oh, there are a lot of problems yet. But to be forewarned is to be forearmed, and the WHO influenza program, with its warning network and its laboratories, well, it's making the work of ordinary doctors like me much easier. For the first time in history, we and everyone else concerned with health, we're in a good position to do something about this bug that's going around.
That was The War on Flu, the UN story of the World Health Organization's part in the struggle to control and defeat the scourge of influenza. Technical advice for this program has been given by Dr. C.H. Andrews, director of the World Influenza Center in London. The UN story tells you each week about the work of the United Nations and its specialized agencies. Work which goes on day after day in many countries of the world to improve standards of living. The UN story is produced and transcribed by the international staff of United Nations Radio.